Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the LEGO Masters recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. I'm your host, Liana Boris, and it's been a while. I think the last time that we recorded, it was actually June 23rd. And Marisa, my fabulous co-host and wonderful sister, how have you been in this long time off?
I have been amazing. And yeah, I was trying to remember when we recorded last too, because as a couple of our questions has brought up, it has been a while since we've had the amount of episodes that we usually record on. So we finally got up to our three over the course of the last 6 weeks. And yeah, we got to record again. But things have been busy with work, just been plugging along and trying to stay cool and out of the smoke from all the wildfires.
Yeah, Colorado's getting all that smoke, catching hands, getting all the smoke. Okay, so yeah, so do you know why LEGO Masters was off the air?
So yeah, the reasoning that I can come up with is they missed an episode or pushed an episode because of the All-Star Game for baseball, for U.S. baseball. And then they also pushed it because the Olympics were going on. So we missed, I think, the last 2 or 3 weeks. There were no episodes until this week because of that. So that is why it's got pushed out. I also think there's probably some sort of altar thing that they're pushing it so that they end up right near the next Masked Singer season. I can see that.
I guess that makes sense. It feels a little bit like throwing the show to the wolves, because when you lose that momentum, people, even myself, it's like, wait, oh shoot, I gotta wait, is LEGO Masters on? Like, when are we gonna catch up? So yeah, I will say that in terms of a strategic move, I don't like it, especially, I haven't looked at the ratings. I'm curious to know how that's gonna affect them. But obviously, if there was something else that Fox thought was more valuable, clearly they're gonna show that instead. So here we are. Here we are.
But we're back.
Yay! We are back. We are back. And we're ready to get our brick on to talk about episodes 5, episode 6, and episode 7 of LEGO Masters season 2. So we got to talk about everything from Legos floating in the air to cars to wind. So I'm actually really looking forward into getting into these episodes, especially because what I had ended up doing was I kind of caught up. And so I had a little bit of that momentum to go from the floating brick episode to the car episode to the wind episode. And it got me really pumped and like back in and invested in the season. I thought these were really fun episodes. And I think there's some interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I did the same thing. I watched episodes 5 and 6 originally, and then I rewatched them last night, actually, along with the new episode, just to kind of rebuild that excitement and have them all kind of spill into each other. And yeah, I'm ready to talk to him for sure.
Okay, perfect. Let's talk about episode 5, One Floating Brick. And this is when Moto and Paris got sent home in the recap. I was like, oh my God, this is so long ago.
I know. That was so my thought ago. Too. I was like going and updating my little note sheet that I keep up. And I was like, wait, who do I delete? I forget what happened.
So long. Yeah. Oh man. Well, here in this episode, we find out that there's no more tables and the teams are going to have to build something suspended in the air. I think this was so interesting because obviously it's a completely different perspective, as they kept emphasizing. It's a 360 view. The story has to be told from all angles.
Right. And that emphasis is what came up in some of the judging, is that, you know, 360 means underneath, it means behind, it means on top. Everything that you could see should be able to tell a story in this kind of sphere. But can I say something? Because they had that little intro video where he's talking to his boss. And I totally thought that was Bob Odenkirk at first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a split second when he came on. I think it's because of the mustache and Better Call Saul. And I was like, wait, is that, oh no, I get what's going on here. I just want to say I love Bob Odenkirk and I'm glad he's doing better.
Yes, I think we can all agree on that. And the other thing that they included in that conference call, too, of course, was Ken Jeong, which actually, I'm not going to lie, that did make me laugh because it was somewhat self-referential. If Fox puts me in everything, please help me. I need a break.
I know. That was, I like the idea that they've kidnapped him and are forcing him to do like conference calls. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. Ken is like locked in a vault somewhere and then they just, you know, trot him out anytime Fox needs him for something.
Right.
That's the contract. Contract you signed with the Fox Devil, I suppose.
I guess so. Anyway, so the logistics of this episode were very cool. It was they had a single 1x14 brick that was tied up with wire suspended from the ceiling, and they had to build something that was going to balance on that, which I think the balance was really cool coming off of the hat episode where they did balance was kind of a big thing and making sure things didn't fall apart. So I think those tied into each other really nicely.
Yeah. One overarching thing that I kept thinking is, oh, okay, it's, you know, it's a floating brick, but it's 14, 1x14. But then when they kept holding it up next to the ultimate builds, like, oh my God, that's so small. That's I so know. Tiny.
Yeah. It must have been some good wire too, because that's, you know, pretty strong to have to hold all those Legos.
Yeah. The real hero here actually has nothing to do with Legos. It's just whatever wire they use to fix it to the ceiling, I guess.
It did make me think, because that, that science fair project I did with the bridges, you know, the piece that I broke, I wanted to go back and see if I could figure out what the weight was that I put on it before I broke, because that, you know, that brick did, it have the wire running through it. So it was a little reinforced, but it did have to hold up a lot of that weight too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if that was also part of the consideration of how do you then build off of that so that that brick doesn't break, but it was one of the Technic bricks, right? So were maybe stronger. I don't know.
They're a little stronger, yeah, because of those holes through them. They kind of have some reinforcement going on almost.
Yeah, okay. Well, and the other thing about this episode was that the golden brick was back in play. So, yes, hallelujah. And you know, we'll talk about that when we talk about the teams. But I was happy that they reintroduced it, because in season one, That's what I thought. Because I think, didn't they use the golden brick? And
it was early too in the first season, I think. And then it never came back, is what I remember anyway. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. So Aaron and Chris. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, it did come back. So Aaron and Christian won it, and then they used it in episode 4, and then 2 episodes later Mark and Boone won it and then used it.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
2 episodes later. So, but
that.
It seemed like actually neither of the teams when they used it needed it. And obviously we had that same thing happen with the first time when Zach and Wayne.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Mark and Steven are actually going to have to use it at some point, because in the course of these episodes we don't see them touch it at all.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, and with good reason, the winners of this brick this time around seem pretty confident. So,
Yeah, I think they're one of our top teams, especially given what we see over the course of these episodes. Well, let's talk about some of the builds, because these were really interesting to see the ways that the teams took the assignment of the 360 view, but also the concept of it floating in the air. So they had to have, you know, the story from all angles. And Caleb and Jacob, the twins, who I felt really came into their own over the course of these episodes as a more prominent team in terms of the narrative. Also, them and their whole brother rivalry with Mark and Steven is absolutely hilarious to me.
That has been fun. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's manufactured, but it's really fun and I'm in it.
When you have Will just egging on both teams on either side, be like, hey, did you guys see they're copying your idea? They're copying your idea, which is what we have here with the sort of like floating island idea.
Yeah, that's actually, and they touch on it in this episode when they talk about Mark and Steven, but it has been a trend in the Lego world, you know, for a little while now, as these big floating islands and how do you make them look really cool from underneath and, you know, chunks of land tapering down and how do you connect them all. So it's neat to see them come out in this episode.
Yeah, when Mark and Steven said that, I was like, oh, it's a trend. It's so hot in Lego right now. Floating island.
So hot right now.
I mean, of course, that's a thing. I was surprised in the moment when he said it. I'm like, what? Lego trends? Oh, yeah. Okay, sure. You can have trends in anything. There's trends in science, for goodness sake. So it makes sense.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so their Farmer Frederick's Floating Fields, which is a mouthful, got attacked by locusts, and they had the four tiers, and then the farmer was fighting them off with water. But I guess there was the nest in the main island, which is the sequel to Farmer Frederick's Floating Fields.
Two
farmer, two floating. I don't know. Something like that.
Two farmer, too many locusts.
Yeah.
I really like the way they use the waterfalls to tie these little islands together. I thought that was a really creative way to do it, to make it look like a more organic thing instead of just having kind of a post, you know, off of the island that stuck out or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then they did have a little bit of motion, I think, in the windmill, if I remember correctly, which was neat. Which ties into foreshadowing.
I didn't think about it at the time, so obviously I didn't know what episode 7 was going to be, but now in retrospect, like, I wish they had kind of emphasized that a little bit more, because it was really in just the, when they did the kind of panoramic around, you could see the windmill moving, but I don't think the judges really even talked about that at all, but I thought that was definitely a cool addition for their build.
And we also saw the return of the little animated videos again with some of these floating islands, which was neat as well, I thought. Thought they did a good job with this one.
I like the way that they showed the farmer fighting the locust.
Yeah.
And they showed what it actually looked like in the build. So it kind of made it a little bit more cohesive that I could tell like why they were showing that. But
yeah, it was a good build, I think, overall.
Yeah, I think so, too. So the next team is Brian and Lauren, and they have the whole world in the clouds painting the sunrise and the sunset, which is their palace thing. And then like the brush strokes collided. And yeah, it was cute.
Yeah, I thought it was a really pretty build, but I kind of agreed with the judges that maybe there wasn't enough detail, or they could have gone a little bigger with the characters, something like that to show off. Because especially when you compare it to looking at Caleb and Jacob's, you know, as the first one, there's a lot of little... Whoop. Hold on. I hit my mic. So especially when you compare it to Caleb and Jacob's, which was the first set, you know, there's a lot of little details in theirs. And Brian and Lauren had kind of a more polished overall figure look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that the story with the sky painters was cool, but I did agree that it lacked a little something to make it really pop, which it's been interesting to watch this team, because while I feel that Caleb and Jacob have really stepped into the spotlight, Brian and Lauren have sort of faded a little bit into the background, and I predicted great things for them.
At the beginning. Beginning of the season, they were kind of like, both of us were like, yeah, these guys are going to be front runners.
Yeah.
And it seems like they've kind of been stable, but not in the top, not in the bottom. They're just kind of
right. I definitely put them in the Tyler and Amy slot, although just as, you know, not. Anyway.
Yeah.
but they've just, yeah, really been safe, 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 safe. It was like safe win, safe, 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 safe. Risk. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm a little nervous for them, but I'm hoping that they can maybe pull it around, because what I saw in the first couple episodes, yeah, I don't know, they just didn't pop. Maybe they're just boring on television and the editors don't know what to do with them. They're like, I don't know, they're just,
yeah, there's not as many, you know, interactive or Will interacting with them, that they don't get as much airtime lately. So maybe that's an editing choice, because they'll be here later, or maybe it's just because, like you said, there's not as much interesting footage to put out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll find out soon. Yeah. But the team that has really stood out quite a bit is Dave and Richard. And they had that really great build in the first episode with the Chicago meets Brooklyn with the pizza and the hot dog. And they had this really cool Jack and the Beanstalk idea with the giant cloud, but then there was the whole thing where Jack convinces the giant that he should give all his money away.
Which, logistically, because I'm a very literal person sometimes, the giant coins, I'm like, they're going to crush the small people down below. Going to drop them down, because Jack can't carry that. It's gigantic and it's gold, so it's heavy.
It's not proportional.
But I do appreciate where they're coming from with that storyline. I think it was a cool build. I think they used a lot of vertical height better than some of the other teams did. And then, I mean, it almost reminded me a little bit of their hat build, though, in that they were kind of one dimensional, you know, it was kind of linear in the way they built out from that. It was, they didn't kind of do the big rounded things like some of the other folks did. It was very linear along the frame of the brick itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then they had the thing with the clouds. They lost their fluffy on the bottom.
Yeah, and they were a little more angular, so I get that.
Right. But, you know, the philanthropic, not, what's the giant? Does the giant have a name?
I don't know if he does. All right, people, at us, because I don't know.
Philanthropist it's giant.
Jack and the Beanstalk with the giant. So, you know.
You know, the giant. The it's giant. Like Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
No, a monster doesn't have a name.
The monster. So yeah, right.
Jack's giant. No. That's wrong.
Sure.
I don't know what that means. Moving all right. on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Okay, let's talk about Susan and Jen, who are the Lego moms, and they want to do the birthday party treehouse thing. So they, you know, talk a lot about how their kids are influential in their interest in Lego. And so that's where sort of this like birthday girl thing, treehouse party concept comes about.
Yeah, I think it was Susan was talking about her kid's birthday is coming up or something like that. And that's what they were trying to bring about. And they, I think, you know, generally they did a good thing. I think the proportions were off. I think the tree was really huge. And even the judges brought up that there could have either been more balloons or you could have done bigger balloons, something a little more fantastical than, you know, kind of a real size thing if you're going for this fantasy type thing.
Mm-hmm. It was a bit of an up concept, right? Where the balloons were tied to the treehouse that then made the treehouse float in the air, I think. But it was I guess that's where the birthday party comes from. I was like, was there a cake involved?
I think they didn't really show it enough because there was, you know, they had a little figure in the tree and the figure mm-hmm. had some stuff going on, but they didn't show it for very long. One touch I really did like, and I think it could have been maybe developed a little bigger almost, but the roots coming out of the bottom of the tree I thought were really cool looking. It gave the idea that there was this motion that it kind of got pulled and swooped out of the ground.
Yeah, I think I just wanted them bigger because they looked right. really cool once they focused in on it. But it looked like this big tree with then these tiny little roots at the bottom.
Yeah, that tree's getting blown over in a high wind. So that tree would not last in episode 7.
Aren't the roots proportional to the branches?
Generally, that is a thing. And that's why
science,
there's a lot of closures on I-70 near us right now because all the trees got burned up in one of the big canyons down here. And now there's nothing to hold the soils in because the roots are all dead. So we're getting mudslides on the highway. So there's your science lesson for the day.
Well, just call up Susan and Jen and maybe they can build some little tree roots out of Legos.
There we go.
Fasten those in there, you know, take care of that dirt problem for you.
We can do that as a Lego build, the mudslide challenge.
What would that even look? You know what they should do?
Build a retaining wall.
Yes. Or something. Sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Because now I'm like all in on this. They did the skyscraper with the seismic activity.
Yeah.
They did the wind to blow things over. Like,
all these natural hazards. Yeah. Like, might as well bring in floods and fires and who knows what else.
Right. Yeah. You have to contain the fire.
Oh, man. I don't know if the fire would work so well. I took that one.
I think from a safety issue, that one also might not be allowed on set, but whatever.
Yeah, that's fair.
You're welcome. Free ideas, Lego Masters. Consider it for next season.
Woohoo.
All right. Maria and Philip are up next, and they have the sea turtle lighthouse that was like swimming around the coral, which I thought was really, really pretty.
Yeah, I really, because they didn't focus much on it until kind of the end when they showed it. And mm-hmm. when they showed the whole build, it was really well done. And it reminded me of the, I think it's the Native American myths where the, you know, whole world is being carried on the back of a turtle. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the coral coming out was really colorful. And yeah, I thought it was a really pretty fun build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they do get the critique that it's like, I guess it looks like the coral is coming out of the turtle instead of the turtle swimming around the coral. But that also could have been a cool concept also. So maybe it's just part of the storytelling. They should have said that the coral was growing out of the turtle.
Yeah, right. It was, like, you know, yeah, earth above and sea below.
Yeah, 100% on purpose. For
absolutely.
Sure. For
what
sure.
I intended.
Well, Natalie and Michelle are up next. So these are the friends who won last week with the incredible Hats Incredible episode. And their concept is this plant, but it's also Whisper's plant. So Whisper is the fairy that lives in the plant.
Planter. Yeah. So it was planter. Whisper's planter, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And it was definitely one of the smaller builds, and they do get critiqued for that. But I thought there was a lot of detail to look at, and they went after macrame, which to me is so 70s anymore. But I think they did a great job with it. I mean, it looked like that, you know, kind of fabric weaving macrame holding the planter up. And I remember mom having, you know, some planter holder baskets that were made out of that. So I think the details they got really well that were pretty.
Yeah, and they also have it hanging down in the middle. Like, I think all of that detailing is really cool. And the way that they made the leaves look like real leaves, which is, I think, what the judges said, too, that was, well, from afar, this looks legitimately like a houseplant. But then you kind of get into some of the details and the story, and Whisper was kind of hidden in the plant, I guess. And that really takes away from the overall vibe of the details that they're trying to give.
Right. I think it goes back to, you know, that could you pick out what this story is without having to ask somebody? And that might be more difficult.
Yeah. You can kind of see the fairy, but yeah, it's challenging. And because it's a minifig that is the fairy, not because you know how you can build characters out of Legos, not just the minifigs. I think that's also part of it. I wonder if they had done that instead. She'd been kind of like hanging on the plant, then maybe that would have been more obvious, but whatever. What do I know?
Yeah, right. It's easy to brainstorm after.
I know, right? Just like the fire retaining wall.
Yeah, exactly.
That I'm coming up with.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Okay, now we're on to our other set of brothers, Mark and Steven. And these guys, again, this is what we were talking about with the floating islands, so hot in Lego right now. But they have the floating gnome forest concept because, as they were told, the judges want to see them let loose, and they thought of floating gnome forests.
Floating gnomes that get to fly on butterflies after a war that came to an end as well. So, yeah, that... I would not have thought of something like that. So good on them for making up something. And they had a lot of good details, kind of similar to Caleb and Jacob. Obviously, it's easy to make that comparison because they're both floating island concepts. But yeah, they do mention that I don't remember if it was Mark or Steven has made several of these before for, you know, competitions and Lego displays. But it definitely showed that they had, you know, really good design for this island.
Yeah, this felt a little bit Mad Libby with coming up with the concept. It's like, all right, I'm going to need
a noun.
Mythical creature. I'm going to need an animal. I'm going to need an event.
Yeah, right. That's gnomes, butterflies, war. Got it.
Yeah. I'm going to need a biome, forest. Okay, great. Right. Got it. But look, the gnomes and the butterflies were at odds, but they became friends and came together in harmony. And another thing that they get a lot of props for is it being so well balanced too, which is something that I actually think everybody really succeeded at, but in certain cases it seems harder than others. I think both Caleb and Jacob and Mark and Steven, and then we'll talk about Zach and Wayne, but they had the ones that were kind of the most spread out that really need to be balanced in kind of a, what's the thing that you put above babies that they like, mobile. I'm a baby. Yeah. Mobile. Yeah.
I'm a baby.
I'm a baby. There's like things about me.
Oh man, listener, I wish you could see her video.
I don't know. I don't know what these.
I don't know
are.
What to do with my hands.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so that that's it. Obviously, takes more skill, and so.
I think
the levels of detail that the big leaves and then the cool details when you get a little bit closer, I think ultimately Mark and Steven end up winning here, get the golden brick. And I think that was well deserved.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's good reason they got that. They also rose to the challenge that the judges gave them with, hey, we need you to be more creative than just here's an island with a castle on it or something like that. Come up with a story. So I think that went in their favor as well.
That's right. Mad Lib stories never let you down. So
word.
Literally words. Yes.
Word.
Sarita and Randall are our team up next. And they have, I think, a little bit of a predictable idea with doing the hot air balloon.
Right.
But they're hoping that, like, oh, if we can build it big, we can do these cool techniques. And then, of course, we'll have the people in the basket that will tell somewhat of a story. But I think, unfortunately, because they were unable to fit like that top and bottom piece of the balloon together, it just really didn't work for them.
Right. And I do think also compared to all the other builds, you know, yeah, they had this pretty big sized balloon, but the details in the balloon were not very strong. It was like, okay, you've made a sphere, basically. That's great. You've got some different colors in it, but you know, there could have been more creativity, like maybe some minifigs having to crawl up it, or you could tell a story of, you know, birds attacking the balloon. There's something else you could have done with it to draw people in a little more.
Mm-hmm. And I think in looking at all of them together, I think Sarita and Randall's was the least fulfilling of the requirements of the challenge. So I think ultimately it was probably, you know, they obviously end up in the bottom two and ultimately are eliminated this episode. I was sad to see them go, but I think based on what they produced, I think it was the right decision. So I couldn't be mad at the judging.
No, I agree with that. Compared to all the other buildings, you know, or builds had a lot more detail or a little bit more story. You know, yeah, some people sitting in a basket, that's great, but could you tell a story from that? That's okay, they're on a hot air balloon, right?
Yeah. I don't know what story you would tell with the hot air balloon.
A bird maybe trying to attack it and bring it down, and you gotta climb up and try to chase off the bird. You can have jetpacks.
Gnomes and butterflies as well. Okay, how about this? How about this? We have the merging of the worlds, and the gnomes and the butterflies work together because now they live in harmony to attack all of the intruders that come. And so they attack.
So they're taking out the balloon? Is that what we're
Yeah. Yes. No, get a little alliance going cross team to like complete the story. I don't know.
Sure. Right.
The final team is Zach and Wayne, and oh my gosh, it was
kidding.
I don't
Huge.
Even so, yeah, they did the sperm whale hunting a giant squid build that ended up being 5'6" long.
Yeah. That thing was gigantic. My notes even say big with four eyes in it. Big. Yeah. And it was, you know, they didn't have a lot of the really tiny details necessarily that everybody else had, but the just sheer scale and balance. And you could see this giant squid wrapped all the way around the whale. Yeah, it was, I thought it was a really cool build, and it would make it like a good part of some sort of undersea diorama, you know, thing at Legoland or something like that.
This was the type of thing that I could see in Legoland based on how they had done it. And so I was very impressed. And of course, Will has the perfect name of Moby Brick.
I know. That was great.
Whale. Yeah. So that was fun as well. And they wrap the tentacles around just, yeah, really cool overall, and then earns them a spot in the top two.
Yeah. And well-deserved, I think, especially for the balance that they had to achieve on that build and just the weight that it had to hold to begin with. Cause that is, I mean, they had some good framework, but it wasn't, you know, totally solid, but that's still a lot of Lego spread out from one tiny brick.
Shout out to the wire.
Word. Good job, wire. Show, yeah. Right.
the wire. Right. So that leaves us with our top two teams of Zach and Wayne because of the giant sperm whale, and then Mark and Steven because of the gnome butterfly pavilion. And Mark and Steven end up winning, take the golden brick. And then it's going to be this ongoing story about, are they going to use it? Are they not going to use it? Are they going to use it? Are they not going to use it? Which we will have to wait to find out on that. But our bottom two teams are Michelle and Natalie and Randall and Sarita, with Randall and Sarita being eliminated. I was actually a little surprised that Susan and Jen didn't end up there, but I think it was probably between Michelle and Natalie or Susan and Jen for that bottom slot.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Just for the scale of build for Natalie and Michelle was quite a bit smaller than everybody else. And then it was over detailed, whereas Jen and Susan had some great detail, but, you know, they kind of fell into that forgetting the 360 thing. The back of their tree didn't really have any detail. And, you know, we know in the past they've had some issues with time. So maybe that's what kind of got them at the end, was they just didn't have time to add some flourishes. But yeah, I could see that.
All right, well, let's crash on in to our next episode, Demolition Derby. Oh, I had so much fun.
This was a great episode. And of course, I nerded out the whole time about the Lamborghini.
Now, as you know, I have watched all of the Fast and the Furious movies essentially over the course of the last 2 months. So
thank you, Pooya.
I'm living my life a quarter mile at a time. All right. So to have these two Demolition Derby challenges where they had to do two challenges, the exact replica of the Lambo, and then, of course, the ultimate Demolition Derby, I thought was a cool way to incorporate both of these. I guess they just didn't feel like they didn't have enough with the Demolition Derby,
Well, and additionally, they did have an episode last season where they had two challenges. They had a mini challenge with the little rally cars that they had to make, and whoever got the farthest or went the fastest, I don't remember, you know, got to have some advantage in the next challenge, which now I don't remember what that one was. But so it's not a new concept overall, but I do agree that, you know, their build time for the actual demolition derby was only 6 hours, and then the build time for the mini challenge was 4 hours. So together, you know, is a full day. But yeah, I think you, 10 hours might have been too much for some of those cars since they give you the chassis to build it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I'm looking, it was the Need for Speed / Super Bridges episode. I'm shocked.
The bridge one, that's right. I forgot about that. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't remember what the advantage was either.
I think it was...
Maybe they had more time or something. That's what it was. They had more time when they started. I think they staggered the start times based on how well they did or something like that. Anyway.
Okay. Something like that.
So can I talk about this Lamborghini?
Yes, you may.
Because in the premiere of season one, they brought out a Lamborghini to show, you know, all the cash you're going to win in the Golden Brick. And I got super excited because they were getting ready to release a Lamborghini Scion set that is, you know, the adult grade version of Lego. And I ended up buying that last year, and it's freaking awesome. So when I saw they were going to have to replicate this in 4 hours, I was like, what in the hell? They definitely did not give them all the parts because there are 3,696 pieces because it has all the internal gear work. It has like a motor that functions. It doesn't have an engine on it or anything, but you can see the pistons move when it's driving around. So I was like, there's no way they're building the full thing. And then when they showed, you know, the box that each of them got, the same box of materials, it's like, okay, that's the skeleton of the build. That makes me feel better about this because it has already taken me 8 hours to go 69 pieces, but that's because I'm also making it stop motion, which if you go to Twitter, you can see how far I've made it in 8 hours. So I'm very excited about it and it's awesome. But now I'm like at the point where I just kind of want to build it because it's taking forever to do it this way.
You got to put bigger gaps between the stop motions.
Well, I'm thinking of bringing in like a diesel mechanic ferry that would like come in, or Lamborghini's logo is a bowl, so like a little bowl in a tutu and a wand or something to come in and like overnight while the mechanics are gone, we'll like put a bunch of pieces on magically to speed it up. So I'm toying with that concept right now. Otherwise, this is going to take me 3 years to finish.
We can go through Mad Lib style to help you come up also with some creative ideas for how to speed the story along. So I mean, I'm just
all right,
saying.
Listeners, at me if you got ideas.
Again, yeah, mythical creature, centaur. Sure, the centaur shows up. All right. Well, so anyway. this was so funny to see the Lambos at the beginning and then, or, you know, the original when they showed it side by side with the one that they had to build, because it felt very much like Nailed It or one of those trying to create the Pinterest recipe version, because it was, some of the cars are really low to the ground, some of the cars are really high off the ground, some of the cars are all boxy, some of the cars were like just like flat pancakes.
I know, I've got that. Michelle and Natalie's reminded me of like a Porsche or a Volkswagen, the way it was kind of bubbly, and Marie and Phillips like was more like a dune buggy because it was like really high off the ground. It was really fun to see, like, and you know, when they're first showing it to them, they don't know that they're going to have to replicate it. So it is kind of a like, oh crap, how did that look?
What does this look like again? And you could even tell, I mean, they didn't even use all the pieces for the skeleton because everybody's table had some sort of car looking thing and then just a mess of pieces around it. I can't even imagine how hard this would have been. But I think it's a situation where it's like, if you get even 25% of the way there, great job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially like, so for me, I have been obsessed with Lamborghinis since I was 7, because I had 2 Micro Machine Lamborghinis back in the day and they were my favorite thing ever. And one of them was actually like a fluorescent yellow green. So I was excited when they came out with a set in green. I was like, yes, filling my childhood dream of owning a Lamborghini. And it's slightly cheaper than owning a real one.
Slightly cheaper. Slightly.
Only like a tenth of the cost, or a hundredth or something like that.
Probably. Oh, man. That's, there's, there's these TikToks, there's a sound, I can't remember exactly what it is, but essentially it's to the effect of, I have adult money now. And so, yeah. And then it's people show the ridiculous things that they've bought or done with their adult money.
Mine is
very much in that vein.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It would totally fit the trend. Well, Caleb and Jacob end up winning here, which again,
I know. Really hard. Okay, so they win the advantage because they win the challenge as self-proclaimed not car people too, which is kind of cool.
Good for them. And we don't know throughout the entire episode until the very, very end what the ultimate advantage is going to be. Okay, so anyway, let's just go through some of the cars and then we can talk about the ultimate derby at the end. And I kind of like the way they did this where they have them build the cars. Then the judges went through and said, okay, we're going to give one spot in the top two away for the car that's most aesthetically pleasing. And then you'll duke it out. And then we'll pick the car that ultimately lasts the longest for the other slot in the top two. So people could kind of play to different strengths, right? It was like, oh, you could do the focus on the aesthetics or you could focus on the strength.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed that they did that, that, you know, it may not be, you know, if you won or not, but you know, you're in the top two if you won even before going into the derby, which was kind of exciting. I also was wondering because each car seemed to have a theme color. So did you notice that too? Like there was, you know, the blue car and the gray car. So I'm wondering if they assigned like a theme color to make it more obvious when they were like ramming into each other. So when parts fell off, you kind of knew who was falling apart.
Yeah, I 100% believe that because each team very clearly has a color and they all picked a different color. So you have the purple Punisher, you have the Rad Devil, which is red. You have the big blue beast. You have the green
Muscle Sprouts.
Tractor. Muscle, that was such a cute name.
I love that name. That made me so happy.
Beware the Bull, which was all brown. So yeah, I bet it's one of those things that they did, but then just didn't end up including in the edit because of time, because this really was a jam-packed episode. But 100%, I agree with that.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh, all right. So let's talk about some of the cars. Zach and Wayne get judged first. And this is also we learned in this episode, Zach has apparently driven a Lambo.
And have never wanted to take up archery and teach it more in my life.
Right? When he said the people
I know.
What?
I think
Marisa's got a new hobby. Yeah, right. Well, they build the purple Punisher, which they have the unique approach of covering the wheels. They have the skirt around the wheels, which at first I was a little suspicious of, but it does give them a lot more weight in the car.
It does. It's got a better distribution and lower center of gravity because they didn't build up so much. So it's a little less prone to being, you know, knocked on its on a side or something. It's more, you know, you scoot it across the floor if you run into it kind of thing. And I did like their idea of trying to enclose the wheels to try and protect them from getting anything into it. Although, as we see later, that wasn't the most ideal idea.
No. And that was the thing was that I feel that you're more likely to end up like making it worse by getting something stuck in there because you can't really protect the bottom and that's where the majority of the debris is going to come from. So,
right. And then it has nowhere to go out instead of it just kind of gets stuck in there. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the idea if they could keep it, you know, closer to the ground, maybe that might have helped if they could like scoop it away from the car as they were driving around. But yeah, it didn't quite work out.
Well, it was described as the hustle and muscle. So Vin Diesel would have appreciated this type of car.
That is true.
You're welcome, Fast and the Furious people. All right, Dave and Richard are up next, and they have the Rad Devil. And they ultimately end up, which I was really surprised about, winning the whole derby.
Yeah, I agree. I was really surprised on that too, because I, you know, when I think of the mechanics side of things, I don't for some reason picture them as strong and I don't remember why that is, but that's just, I think it was something balance related or something. I don't know though. They withstood the earthquake really well.
Also, that's true. I think when they did the earthquake one, they just built this like solid, super solid, tight structure, right?
They're so the ones that had the open tubes, like the open frame with the exoskeleton.
That wasn't Moto and Paris?
No, Moto and Paris had Remember they had the Technic frame, would they just paste it on the outer side?
But Dave and Richard had the, it was essentially just the tube, right? And then it was just all like well-locked bricks.
Yeah.
The interlocking, interleaving technique or whatever it's called. I wonder if they just did something similar here where effectively they just created a wrecking ball of just boom, boom, boom.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had the alternate strategy where they left the wheels uncovered.
Right. Yeah. To leave room for pieces to be able to come back out, which ended up helping them out in the long run. I actually really liked the design. The second time around watching it, I paid more attention to the details. There's a lot of cool details in their build.
The fire spitting engines and all of that, which gives it very much a Demolition Derby vibe.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mark and Steven are the next team, and these are the guys that end up in the top two for aesthetics, which I thought was hilarious that very early on they had described their nemesis as the Technic bricks, and so they said, you know what, we're not even going to bother, we're just going to make something that looks really cool.
Yeah, and it ended up paying off for them. I thought it was really well designed. It reminded me of like some little, you know, dirty hot rod that's built and goes around to car shows that is zombie themed or some sort of horror movie themed. It was really cool looking.
It definitely looked like one of those cars that when you would go to the arena demolition derbies and they would have the car. It felt very much like it could fit right in there. The Toxic Titan with the apocalyptic theme and the slime. The slime details looked really cool. They looked like slime.
They did a good job making that look kind of organically draped over the car. And like, it got splattered with some toxic waste or something at some point. That was cool.
Well, good job, Mark and Steven, for ending up in the top two, although your car did not last very long in the
end. No, it was it was pretty much out right away.
Yeah.
The side fell off and then the top fell off. Yeah. So they played to their strengths and it worked out for them, actually.
Yeah. Strategic, all right? I can't fault them for that. Susan and Jen are the next team who created Marisa's favorite name, the Muscle Sprouts Tractor.
I'm such a punaholic. I think that's half of why I love this show. And Will's really good with those too. But yeah, so Muscle Sprouts, it was a really cool looking tractor. I think just as a set in general, that would be a very cool set to kind of build and develop. And, you know, it looked like the threshers on a tractor that, you know, I see out here in the fields when they're doing hay and stuff. And it was very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I felt that, and maybe this is, I've only seen a few videos of remote control derby, but I feel like a lot of the cars have those slants on the side so that essentially if they run into another car, the car just drives over them and it'll like flip over.
Yeah, right. Them off balance. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of like it'll drive over it and then flip over. And I thought that's kind of what they were going for here, but ultimately those pieces were weak. I mean, it's
right. They were, yeah, they were aesthetic versus the structural function of that. Yeah.
Yeah, not so functional.
Yeah. The aesthetics were good, though.
Yeah, well, and I thought the little eyes were cute.
They were really great. Adorable. They really brought it together kind of as a more character, like the car itself is the one going in for it. So, for the tractor.
Right, instead of the, like, a driver. It was the tractor, yeah. Maria and Philip, now they're the ones that have the big blue beast because they were inspired by something out of a video game with the whole TNT, and then they have the TNT things that would be, I guess, a potential obstacle.
It definitely made me think kind of a Mario Kart or something like that, where, you know, you have something and you throw it out the back at your opponents and they run into it and blow up, or, you know, obviously they couldn't do the blow up part, but I thought it was kind of a fun obstacle type thing that, you know, if a car rammed them too hard, maybe it would pop out and hit that car, or the car would run over it and get stuck, something like that.
I think they ended up running over something and then smacking into a wall and then they fell out.
Yeah, that's exactly how that came out.
Didn't exactly work as intended, but the concept was interesting.
Yeah, I think they had a good idea going into the going into the race.
Well, Brian and Lauren are up next, and they have the Beware of the Bull, and we didn't spend a lot of time on them. I thought it was cool looking. They had the horns for the details. It definitely looked like the face of a bull.
Yeah, and it kind of, I was trying to look at it because, you know, the back didn't look like a bowl. I was trying to figure out, because there was, they had some red detail on the top that I thought maybe was supposed to be the cape that the matador was swinging over. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at it. But like you said, they didn't spend much time kind of showing it. We're in that same thing from the first episode or the previous episode that, okay, we're not going to focus on them much right now. So we'll see what that means in the future.
Yeah. All right. Bye. Yeah. Bye, Brian and Moore. Caleb and Jacob. All right, so Caleb and Jacob, they have the advantage, and they built the sunshine wagon.
Oh, but wait, it's not the sunshine wagon, because angry Alex, the tow truck driver who was helping everybody, now hates everybody, apparently, and wants to try and run them off the road and hit them. I really did like their chain, you know, with the wrecking ball behind them, or they kept calling it a rock. And I was really, really wanting them to see, like, to try and spin that and hit somebody. But this to me was like the Mark and Boone moment of the first episode from last year, but funnier.
Oh, this was
like, it was so like, I funny. Felt bad for him, but I laughed so hard. And then I felt bad for leaving so hard. And then I laughed again. I was just, oh man. And they cut to, you know, Natalie and Michelle talking about it. They're trying not to laugh. And yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately, what happens here for Caleb and Jacob is they ultimately win this 30-second advantage, which means that they don't have to participate in the Derby for 30 seconds. So then they're sort of hidden behind this wall. End of 30 seconds, the wall drops.
I can't even like listen to you without laughing.
I know. Well, because when it happened so fast.
It was did. Like, all right,
they're going to enter the Derby. The wall drops.
Crash. It, like one thing sideswiped somebody and then straight out the end of the arena that was open. Oh my gosh. Even like, watching it again.
And then when in episode 7, when they brought it back, I was like, so funny. They didn't even touch a single car and just immediately, and I think, I can't remember who described it as Thelma and Louise, but Thelma and Louise Will, themselves. Yeah,
right off the cliff into the Canyonlands.
I was, it was so funny. It was so funny. I was laughing really hard. It just added to the ultimate chaos. I overall really, really loved the Derby. I loved when they all piled up in the middle.
Yeah, and we're all kind of locked together a little bit.
And none of them could really drive the car very well. So when it was the final two teams and it was the Punisher, the Purple Punisher versus the Rad Devil or whatever, and the red car couldn't line up properly. And I don't remember who was
like
driving.
Trying to back up and like get around to it. Yeah.
Either Dave or Richard, one of them was driving and couldn't align the car properly to smash into the
car. And it was like
car.
A slow motion, like bump.
Yeah, and then when they finally got it lined up, it was just boop, bing, boop. Oh, it was hilarious. I actually would have no problem seeing this coming back again because I thought the humor in the cars smashing into each other.
Oh man,
maybe I'm a simpleton,
so fun.
But it was very enjoyable. Yes,
I agree. I think it was. Yeah, it was really well done, and I did like because I was wondering how they were going to do it with the actual controls, because you can make remote control from all Lego pieces, but that would have really thrown this challenge out. So I'm glad they gave them kind of a pre-built chassis to work with that. I think that evened the playing field a little bit and made it a lot more fun.
Right. And that and they all got the same controller, all of that. And it seemed like they got it before so they could kind of practice driving around, although the twins would have benefited from maybe a little bit more. I think it's just the excitement, you know.
It was so exciting, and okay, open the barrier, and they're off, they're off the board.
Yeah, very Leroy Jenkins.
Oh, very much, so much Leroy. Oh my gosh,
Leroy Jenkins just ran off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, let's touch on Natalie and Michelle's build. We didn't talk about theirs, which was super cute. They had the unicorn horn with the like fear of the horn, and it was very fun colors. Was really cool to look at.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really cute build, kind of, you know, really good contrast with a lot of the other cars that went the more like angry, you know, apocalyptic type route. And so it was really fun to see the brightness of their car too. in comparison, although the horn fell off pretty quick.
Yeah, that was the first thing that really started, I think, the chaos for me after the car pileup was that the horn just flew off and then they just kind of ran away from the horn.
And they just so like funny. Tried to hide in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Them hiding from everybody, which honestly is not
that's
a bad
a strategy. Yeah, right.
I do kind of wonder if the Red Devil or Rad Devil, they kind of did that a little bit to, you know, all right, let me just like stay away and just survive till the end and then hopefully take out the other teams.
Yeah, right.
But okay, so Mark and Steven win for aesthetics. Dave and Richard win because of the ultimate derby. And then we have the bottom two, which Susan and Jen ended in because the lack of details, the coolest parts of their car fell off. And then Caleb and Jacob because of the disastrous driving. Which is so funny because I think it was one of the Brickmasters said, you're not here necessarily because of your driving skills, but because we didn't get to see the car in action.
Perform, yeah, right.
But that's because of the driving skills.
Yeah.
Like you didn't get to see it in action because of the bad driving skills. You know what I mean?
Control it, yeah.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I think I honestly think Jamie was trying to be a little nice there when he said it. At least it felt that way to me. Like, no, it's okay that you ran off the board. We didn't get to see it hold up to other people hitting it. That's what it was. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And I think they had already, you know, decided who was going home, obviously, at that point. So it was kind of like you're here and you know why you're here kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. We kind of technically we have to put you in the bottom because how do we justify not putting you in the bottom?
Yeah, exactly. Even though your build looked really cool, you know, you didn't make the top for that, but
Man, if they had put him in the top because of aesthetics and then they had just driven it off, that would have been
pretty funny too. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. Well, unfortunately, Susan and Jen are the ones that end up in the bottom. And it was at that moment where I was like, there's no way they're going to eliminate Caleb and Jacob for this.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, I think it's Susan and Jen's time to go. But Brickmaster Amy got emotional.
I know. That was, even Caleb and Jacob did too.
Yeah.
So that was really sweet. And that's when they kind of touch on like, oh, you guys are building this community and everybody's really supportive. And yeah, I thought it was sweet. Although there was definitely a second there where Jen's look was like, oh, she knows she's going home. Like she was not happy about that, which I don't blame her, but yeah, that's tough.
It's tough. Yeah. Well, it's cute. Yeah, it was cute to see them all emotional.
It was. There's a lot of hugs. So,
A lot of love. So that does it for episode 6. Let's talk about episode 7. Bricking.
I laughed.
Get it?
At this one. Pretty good, too. But I was already giggly because I had just rewatched episode 6 as well. So, I mean, yeah, that's going to be funny to me for a while. I have a feeling. So anyway,
it's like the karmic, I don't know, this or ironing or some, you know, the literary geniuses out there will tell me what this is. But the winning the advantage and then immediately driving off the cliff. It's a good thing. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a writing prompt.
No, it's like a thing, like an allegory or a metaphor, but it's like karma, you know, it's not like a name.
It's definitely not allegory.
I know, but it's got a name, okay? There's a literary device or something, whatever. Anyway, I'm a genius. It's cool. You can tell I haven't.
You can tell both of us are very sciencey. Yeah. Nope, it's not technical writing. Okay, I don't care.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm sorry.
You mean I have to flourish? I can't like cut words to make it more succinct? What is this?
Yeah, unclear. Yeah. Instructions unclear. The challenge this week was to make Lego an all-weather sport where the teams had to build a world with a centerpiece that spins because the build will be subjected to 10 mile an hour up to 60 mile an hour wind from a wind machine. And part of the specific criteria was how do you bring storytelling into a build that gets more fantastic with the wind, which I think was really, to hear it emphasized so many times throughout the episode, I was like, okay, this is like this is the critical criteria. It's not necessarily that your build holds up to the wind. It's that you're able to do the storytelling element and incorporate it with the challenge of the wind.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that definitely, you know, came back in the judging to kind of haunt a couple teams that might have done better if it was more about just standing up to the wind. I think there was also another one of those little hidden criteria, because at one point they showed Philip measuring the tower with a measuring tape. And so I think there was a certain height they had to hit on their centerpiece tower. And it looked like, you know, everybody kind of had similar height towers. So I think there was that criteria in there as well that wasn't spelled out.
Okay, that makes sense, because yeah, they did all seem to be of uniform height.
Because why would you build that high if you didn't have to?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah,
well, maybe it was because, like, we need the fan to be able to hit the whole thing. So based on it's based on the diameter of the fan.
Yeah, right. That could be too.
But one other cool thing I think that they did was that they gave them a smaller fan to test their build throughout. So that was nice, because then at least they could test, I think, up to 17 miles an hour is what.
Yeah, I think that somebody said that. Yeah, right. And that, so it gave them an idea of, like, things that would, you know, definitely not withstand it. It didn't obviously push them to the top, but they could see if it would withstand at least the beginning wind power that they were going to have to go against.
Yeah. All right. Well, the first team up is Natalie and Michelle. And Michelle's husband, I think Michelle's husband is, I guess, a windmill technician.
Yeah, that's what she said. Oh. I thought it was kind of funny. She's like, oh, I should have paid more attention when he's talking about it. Yeah. I was like, oh, that, yep, okay.
I feel you.
Yep.
But their whole concept was the child's world, where the windmill is the pinwheel, and then they have all of the toys around it. This looked amazing.
It was awesome. It really reminded me of their first build with, like, the paints and the arts and crafts supplies. They are really good at kind of mimicking styles of toys and things like that. So, like, they had, you know, the little xylophone that I had as a kid. They had a little mimic one of those, and then the little, you know, colored tubes that you stack on each other and blocks. Yeah, I really enjoyed their builds in this.
The blocks, the kite tail, and I thought that was all, it looked, and I think the judges said it, like, it's bold, it's visual, and the fact that the windmill is tied into the build. I mean, in most cases it was, but here it was just one of the toys. But it was a really creative way to incorporate a windmill, because everybody else just did, oh, it's a farm. It's a windmill.
Yeah, exactly. I think they took a really creative approach to it. And and they had, you know, the kite tail fluttered in the wind and held up to it, and a few other little elements fluttered and, you know, kind of rotated in the wind too, that were cool.
And they were able to make it to 45 miles an hour. So
yeah, not bad. And the, you know, most of their builds stood up. It was just, I think, a couple of the blades of the turbine that came off. Which apparently was the criteria.
Yeah, which I had no idea. Okay, so it's specifically when the fan blades fall off. That's when you're done.
Because, yeah, later, too, we see a couple teams that other stuff breaks off, but they don't call it until the actual turbine breaks off.
Yeah, I thought it would have been when the building blew over, but I guess most of the buildings probably would have been able to survive the 60 mile an hour winds, so they had to change the criteria to the fan blades. I don't know.
That could be, yeah, because I mean, a lot of the buildings were pretty sturdy that they had.
Right. Well, the next team we're going to talk about, the whole tower blew right off, which is what I thought was going to happen to most people. And this is Zach and Wayne, who did the Oasis build, which is their home in California.
Yeah, they did a really good job integrating that tower into other elements on their build, so that as the wind picked up and got it moving more, you got little flowers that kind of rotated at the front. You had these little dogs on a wheel that looked like they were running around, and those kind of kicked in at, you know, higher and higher miles per hour. So I think that was really cool, the way they incorporated that movement in their story.
Super, super creative. And I think maybe that's why ultimately their whole tower just blew right off, because you're spending so much time incorporating how do you turn the wind into movement mechanically, instead of just, oh, it's just going to dance in the wind, which seemed to be a favorite phrase of Jamie in this episode. It's like, it's dancing. There's lots of things dancing.
It's dancing. Well, maybe it sounds better than wiggling. Yes,
I guess so. Yeah, it's wiggling the opposite in the wind. Opposite of Footloose. There's so much dancing. All the dancing.
Can't even keep No babies in the corner here.
But I did think that this was probably one of the more creative ways to incorporate the wind power into the other elements of the build. And
sure.
I think they were one of the only teams to do it. Maybe there's one or two others, but they had so many that you listed, and that really, I think, elevated them to the top of the field.
Yeah, and they all seemed kind of, you know, tied together. And then it was, you could see the belt that was driving everything flew off first. And then about 5 miles per hour afterwards, the whole tower went down. But that they made it to 55. So, yeah, it just blew straight out.
Yeah, it did. All right. So Brian and Lauren are up next, and they had the Tidal Turbine Tango, which was also under siege.
Was it under siege?
Under the sea.
Under the sea. So this, you know, they showed us clips. This was probably the most interaction we had between the judges and them leading up to the actual, you know, reveal of their build. And they talked a lot about, well, there's too much gray. Things are blending in. It's not going to be colorful enough. And so they did a lot to try and make that color pop. They had a lot of cool bigger characters, and then they, you know, kind of patched some other colorful, you know, those leave type bricks on top of it to try and bring out the color, which kind of just made it look a lot busier, in my opinion. Yeah. And they bring that up.
I didn't mind the gray base, because I felt that then that's almost the perfect neutral background to have your characters pop. So, and then when they critique them that, oh, well, your colorful characters got lost. Like, well, it's because they tried to cover everything with color, like all the color little corals and things like that. Because I feel like what Brian and Lauren are really good at is building the characters.
Right.
That's something we've seen them consistently do a good job of throughout the season. And so I think that they got the feedback from the judges and then tried to alter what their vision was. Whereas I do wonder if they hadn't gotten that critique, what ultimately they would have ended with. Because I trust them to build those cool characters.
Yeah, I agree. I think if, you know, maybe if they hadn't gotten that, they could have built like a few more just bigger characters, like to put on the front, so that it was like a bunch of not too many pops of color, but like more focused, bold pops of color of, you know, okay, here's a starfish, here's this.
Yeah. Maybe make them bigger or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
But they survive up to 50 miles an hour. And this seemed to be their failure mode seemed to be the same as a lot of others, where the blades actually hit the tower. And that's the reason why they fell off.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because it's not something I thought about. But if you think about that wind hitting those blades, you know, a lot of them are thin enough they'd flex. Yeah, right. And so I guess the fix for that is you build the blades out farther, but then the reinforcement on that might be harder. So yeah, that was an interesting aspect of this challenge.
Mm-hmm. So Brian and Lauren end up going out at 50 miles an hour, and then Mark and Steven survive all the way to 60 miles an hour with their wind power terraforming build.
The shapes of their towers, I think, were the most unique compared to everybody else. And they had a very aerodynamic look in those towers as well. I think they were very solidly built. I thought that was a great idea. And I think that's, you know, the tower is even kind of pulled away from the blades a little bit, which maybe gave them those room a little more room for those blades to flex. And then I also thought the astronauts had a little bit of an Among Us style to them.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out they're Among Us players.
Yeah, right.
That's where the concept came in. Yeah, this was when I first saw the towers that they were building, it reminded me of a cruise ship, like those fans back of a cruise ship. So I wasn't entirely sure what exactly they were having to build there. But then the fact that they were able to turn it into, I mean, obviously it was a windmill. At the end of the day, I think their biggest critique was, well, you focus so much on those big buildings, but then the world below gets lost.
Yeah, it's not as detailed. There wasn't as many things, although I did really like the little astronauts on the strings, like flying behind the turbine. I thought that was kind of fun. And they stayed the whole time, too, which I was really surprised about. I didn't expect them to. I thought they would fly off at some point in time, but
I'm surprised that they were. I mean, so many of these people were able to anchor these things to survive such fast speeds. But
I think they should have gone with Mars, though, because Mars has winds and the moon does not. But that is my nerdy planetary NASA. opinion for you all.
Well, speaking of nerd, it was actually really cute because when I was watching it back, I think it's either Zach or Wayne, maybe both of them. It's not even their build, and they're just pumped that it survived so long. They're just excited for it in the background.
Yeah, that was fun to watch everybody really like getting pumped up about everybody's build. That was so cool.
Again, but like the whole little community that they're building is really adorable.
Yeah, right.
Dave and Richard are up next, and we get a lot of them throughout the episode because we hear that initially they want to utilize sound, but then they get some critiques about it and they do some testing and stuff's not working. But we also have the concept of gnomes here, so at least we have something consistent.
Because no matter the weather,
that's right.
What this is called.
Okay.
Yeah, my late Gen Xer, brain enjoyed the Soundgarden Audio Slave joke that Will mm-hmm. made, so I just got to point that out. But this was a completely novel approach compared to what everybody else did, I think, they still had the tower, obviously, but they had little wind chime looking things in the tower itself. They had all these flowers, which Lego's really big right now into, they've got a botanical series that's out. So I've actually got quite a few, the flowers in a vase on my dining room table are Lego right now.
Aww.
And so it was really cool to see them build these. And looking at them, I honestly didn't think they'd hold up very much, but it's kind of that, the bending willow versus the sturdy oak or something. The oak's going to blow over, whereas the willow, because it can bend, can take a lot of that wind and distribute that power away.
I think also part of it is because they had so many, I don't know how they managed to build all of this in the time allotted, because it's covered in flowers and gnomes. And I think because of that, it's just, it can, as a unit, take the brunt of all the wind and kind of disperse it throughout. So I wonder if that was part of the reason why all of the little flowers were able to survive. So even though they ultimately lose their blades at about 50 miles an hour, all the flowers hung on. Their little roots, they hung on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And just the uniqueness of their build. I think, there was some sound, and they even mention it, after it breaks, that you could hear those little wind chimes clinging against each other, even though they're just little bricks hanging there, over the sound of the fan, which the judges looked like they were up with Will, at the top. So for them to be able to hear it over that fan, too, was really cool.
Yeah, that's impressive. And it's really unique. And I thought from the get-go, I was like, this is either going to go really well or really poorly. And
absolutely.
I'm happy that it went really well for them.
Yeah, me too. That was cool.
Now, Caleb and Jacob. Now, another little bit of a rivalry, because they end up doing something that's under the water as well, similar to Brian and Lauren. But I guess they're in the Atlantic versus the Pacific. So don't worry.
Okay. We're good.
It's all okay. And they build the portal to Atlantis.
The architecture on their building, I thought, was really neat and well done. They had a lot of details, which judges point out. I loved the use of the little fish as architectural carvings on the side. The trident looked really cool, recessed kind of in the building itself. And then they had some good characters, although I think Brian and Lauren's characters were maybe a little bit more developed and better, but they still had some good characters that moved with the wind and like these little coral things that kind of waved with the wind or with the wind as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not say with the water, but this is wind.
Water, wind, same thing. Not a whole lot of dancing, but there was some dancing, some movement, and the fact that they over-engineered theirs paid off, because even though they lost one of the side pieces, ultimately it survived to the 60 miles an hour because of the way they had it designed. So props to them. But at this moment, I was still confused about exactly what the judging criteria was. I thought, oh, okay, so it's between Caleb and Jacob and Mark and Steven, because both of them
hit 60. Yeah. Right.
Obviously, so not the case. But.
Yeah, this is a little different than the earthquake scenario. Yeah, it wasn't until they called out who the top people were that I was like, oh, apparently that didn't matter.
Right. Well,
so
I think
much
it mattered
as
somewhat.
Right. Right. But it wasn't the defining factor, because our winners did not hit 60 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So the ultimate winners here were Caleb and Jacob, the top two teams were Caleb and Jacob, and then Dave and Richard. And of course, I always love this when reality TV shows do it, where they have that like subtle shot to the people who think that they should be in the top two, or like the editors want you to think that they deserve to be in the top
two.
Yeah,
right.
So they get that subtle shot of Mark and Steven because they're the ones that theoretically probably would have been in third place here, right? And got snubbed because they also hit 60 miles an hour. Yeah. But yeah, Dave and Richard end up as our ultimate winners for, I think, a lot of the reasons that we talked about with the aesthetics and the flowers and all of that.
Yeah, just completely different approach, aesthetics, a different way to include the wind and going for the sound, that all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, the final team we're going to talk about, poor Maria and Philip.
So disappointing.
Oh, I felt really bad for them because they build new Tinkerton City, but their main story here, which actually, when they started popping up a bunch in the edit, I was like, oh no, Maria.
Yeah,
and Philip,
right.
No.
Yeah. And they really focus on that first propeller she makes, and then, you know, she's just holding it and the blade falls off and it's like, oh no.
And then Philip tries a crack at it, but with the little just thin blades that he ends up building, they're only able to hit 20 miles an hour, which is, I think, what, 25 less than the lowest team? Yeah, because Natalie Michelle would have been the other closest at 45.
So, I just have a sad face next to it in my notes. It felt so bad. And they kind of knew it, too, that, like, especially going into being in the bottom two, they were like,
I think it's tough also because it's not that their aesthetic critiques could potentially make up for the low wind speed.
Right.
Jamie
brings up that they're not as, you know, developed in some of their, you know, details and techniques as some of the other teams. And so that, makes it kind of difficult to say. I know, right?
Okay. Not as simple, simple building techniques. Yeah. But it was kind of funny, the little tiny propeller, because in proportion it's so tiny.
It was really tiny compared to everybody else's. Yeah. I like their idea. It made me think of one of my favorite Futurama episodes where they find out Da Vinci's an alien and he's from this planet where he's the dumb one and it's all these inventors. So I was kind of thinking of that episode and I was hoping they would do better, but not so much.
Not so much. And Maria and Philip end up in the bottom with Lauren and Brian as the other team. But unfortunately, due to probably the speed and the build issues, Maria and Philip are ultimately eliminated. I'm sad to see them go. I'm really impressed with them because they made it a lot further than I thought they were going to go. So props to them for impressing.
Yeah, no, they've had some good stuff. I think they you know, definitely were not weak builders by any means, but just maybe lacking some of the finesse of some of our final group here.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's tough because all the teams left are super, super, super strong. So it's really just getting into those nitty gritty details, because I think we're down to our top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, our top six.
Okay.
Man, this is a really talented season. I was like, only six? Like, that's anyway.
This is a really good season. And honestly, right now, I could see a lot of these teams going forward. So I think we've got some really good competition. And next week, which should be next week, viewers, if you are listening, So yeah, hopefully there will be a new episode next week because all the major sporting events that would delay this should not be going on next week.
Yeah. And next week, I will tell you, I'm so excited. They have to build a freaking puppet.
And they have to collaborate with another team to tell a story, it looks like. Although, oh my gosh, because I've been rewatching Arrested Development, having up as a poppet, that's all I could see because I just got into those episodes. I was like, oh no.
I'm sure
it won't be like that, but that's all I could hear it first.
Oh, if someone does a Franklin parody, like It's Not Easy Being Lego or something like that.
Oh, that would be great. It's not easy being a brick. It's not easy being... Just gonna leave it alone.
All right, so we're gonna see what happens there. Again, we have this, you know, the technical part of it, because they actually have to build a freaking puppet that has arms and a mouth and moves and shakes, and then the storytelling because they have to collaborate with another team. I think the ideas for the episodes have really just been so strong, and I'm looking forward to see what the teams are able to do.
I agree. So do you think, because we have six teams and only three episodes left, and we know there's going to be three in the final episode, I'm assuming, because that's what they did last time around. So do you think this is going to be the other double elimination episode? Like they had the two like superhero stories that had to come together last, I think it was the superhero stories last season, that they had to then pair with another group to tell a story. Do you think they're going to do a double elimination here?
Okay, so let's see. So Let's count it out. All right. So episode 8, we have 6 teams left.
Right.
And so we would go down to, if it's regular elimination, we go down to 5 teams. Then right. episode 9, we go down to 4 teams. Yeah. So then episode 10, we would have the four teams in the
yeah.
episode. Right. It's possible. That would be brutal.
That would be brutal, I think. But I could also, I mean, I don't know how they're going to get down to 3 unless they do 4 in the final.
I'm trying to look. They're... Oh, it's because we have more teams. Okay, so we
right,
have 10
we started
teams in
with,
season 1,
yeah,
and
right.
we have 12 teams here. Okay, and we're for sure there's only 10 episodes?
I'm pretty sure that's what I saw online when okay. I was looking at the beginning of the series.
Then, yeah, I think we're going to have either that or we're going to have 4 teams in the finals, which, to be honest, I'm not that upset about if they end up doing it that way, but... Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think we're so conditioned to have like a top 3 because you got silver, gold, and bronze, or you know, whatever it is. It's like, no, 3 makes sense. 4, that's one outside of that. No one, that's
what?
Zinc. I don't know.
I guess
they get a zinc medal.
Surprise. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we will find out soon. I think that does it for everything on our end. You know, if you're not watching Lego Masters, you're just listening to the podcast, welcome. I hope you're having a great time. But if you do have some time on your hands, I recommend just binging the episodes. It's easy. You can just throw them on while you're folding laundry, something like that, and just kind of watch what's going on in the background. And because to be honest, it's been a fun season. There's some fun teams and it's been nice getting to know everybody.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's definitely one of those you could, you know, as I think it was Rob that said, you could fold laundry to it. One of those kind of shows, you know, it's definitely. fun for the kids. It's just everybody's in a good mood, you know, really. So it's just fun to watch.
All right. Let's get out of here. Marisa, what are you up to, I guess, apart from making stop action videos?
That's about it. No, I'm working. I'm actually getting ready to teach a class at the college here in town for geology. So that's exciting, but nothing, you know, anybody online would be excited about, I guess, or be able to attend. So otherwise, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is @Shenura, which is T-S-H-E-N-U-R-A. And otherwise, you can find me popping in occasionally to watch Puya and Liana on Twitch.
Yeah. Well, you can follow me on Twitter @LianaRHAP. And as Marisa mentioned, yeah, playing some Among Us here and there on Twitch. But if you are interested in the other podcasts I'm doing, I'm covering Drag Race All-Stars Season 6 with Beth and Amon, which has been super fun. There's like a game within a game thing that's supposed to happen at some point. We're all very confused about it. And who doesn't love logistics? So if you want to hear us talk about most and logistics,
I got to make that for a shirt for you. Who doesn't love logistics?
Who doesn't love logistics? I know. Oh my gosh. I will tell you. So on Big Brother, this was, I guess, a couple of weeks ago now, but there was one guy who he ran his HOH and he scheduled all his meetings out and he said, okay, I'm going to have this amount of time for this. And he had this whole logistical plan for how he's going to do his one-on-one HOH. OH meetings and I had team meetings and 101. I was like, oh, I love you. It's so well organized.
Someone else is like me.
Yeah, someone like me. And on that note, I'm also talking Big Brother here and there. I'm going to be on some recaps, the Saturday morning updates, and then Mike and I are doing the B&B. If you didn't check out the episode we did with Amon and Wynn covering the first 4 weeks, I highly, highly recommend it. It was a complete mess, total fun, and just very, very enjoyable.
Awesome.
Okay, that does it for us. Let's get out of here. Thank you, everyone. And yeah, we'll...
If you brick leave it, you can rebuild.
Oh, yeah, what was it? If you brick leave it, you can
brick build Cheeve it.
No, if you brick... Shoot.
If you brick leave it, you can build Cheeve it.
Is that really what it was? No, it's not.
I'm pretty sure it was because brick and build were the two in there. I just don't remember what order they were in. And I feel like the building should be second.
I was going to make it
out of Legos and I never have. Maybe I'll do that for the final.
All right. Well, and maybe I'll try to find exactly what it is, but that sounds right. I trust you.
Oh, good.
All right. So remember, if you can brick leave it, you can build Cheeve it. No, it's not.
Is it really? I promise.
Okay. What episode did they talk about this in?
I don't know. This is last season. I'm just going to Google it. Brick leave. This is awesome.
Yeah, I need to
right
Google
here.
Brick leave it. Brick leave.
Cheeve.
Brick leave it? All right, hold on. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
Did you mean Brick Leave It and Bill Cheeve It? Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Brick Leave It and... All right, well, whatever. Anyway, you guys know what we're talking about. Get your brick on.
Ooh, it takes me to a video on bricklaying for actual bricks.
Okay, no, not that. No.
Definitely not that. Okay.
If you can brick leave it, you can build Cheeve It. So you are right.
That's what I said.
Right. I know.
Okay, he knows her Legos. Oh, it's me.
All right, we're done. We're out of here. Right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks.